Time for Hope has had the privilege of having many gifted and insightful authors appear as our guests through the years. We have decided to rerun from time to time some of our past shows related to subjects that did and will again give our viewers the opportunity to be informed and inspired to accept the challenges they are currently experiencing in their lives. To help married couples deal with relationship issues, Dr. Frieda has chosen to rerun her interview with Dr. Gary Chapman as they discussed his book, The Four Seasons of Marriage.
Thank you for joining us today on Time for Hope, a faith-based mental health program. Our guest is one of America's best-known marriage and family therapists and award-winning author of The Five Love Languages, Dr. Gary Chapman. Today we're talking about one of his new books, The Four Seasons of Marriage. In it, Dr. Chapman relates that marriage relationships are constantly changing. In fact, they go through identifiable seasons that may occur numerous times throughout the life of a marriage. That is, every couple will experience a succession of winters, summers, springs, and falls, and some of these seasons of marriage are more enjoyable and productive than others. But our guest adds, regardless of the season of your marriage, there is always hope and room for improvement. Gary, it's always great having you on Time for Hope.
Well, thank you, Frieda. It's good to be back with you.
When I get to tell people, I get to have Gary because he lives kind of close and there's an attraction just beyond me.
That's right.
That's between Time for Hope Studios and some grandchildren.
And the grandchildren, that's right.
And so
this is a good stop for me on the way to see the grandchildren,
right.
Yes.
And you're headed there today.
So, I am indeed.
Yeah, we know about those grandchildren, and that's just a good word for them. Grand, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Grand. A new book, The Four Seasons of Marriage. You've done a wonderful job. As always, you've done a wonderful job. I think it is a great compliment to The Five Love Languages and some of the other things that you've written.
Well, Frieda, I'm hoping that this book will help couples have a tool by which to discuss their marriage. You know, as a counselor at church, I often walk up to men alone and I say, "How's your marriage?" And you know, the guy was, "Oh, it's okay, we're doing okay," you know. But if they read the book, they'll be able to say, "You know, to be honest, we're in a winter right now," or "I'm in fall or spring or summer." I'm hoping it's going to give couples tools with which to describe what's going on in their marriage. And consequently to say, are we happy in this season, or would we rather go to another season? So I think it's a good paradigm to help couples think about the quality of their marriage.
You know, I like that, and I had not really, even studying the book, I had not even really thought about that, how useful that can be to be able to identify exactly where one thinks they are in a marriage. This probably came with the whole idea of life itself moving through seasons, I would guess, right?
It did, yes. And you know, most of the time when people think of the four seasons of marriage, if they hear that title, they think, oh, well, we start in spring when we get married, and when we get old, we're in winter, you know. And I say, no. We have many springs and summers and winters and falls. They happen all the time, just like in nature. And so the idea is that, you know, we, however, create our seasons. In nature, they come. One follows the other. But in a marriage, you can go from spring to winter overnight. In fact, some people go from spring to winter on their honeymoon. And so what I'm talking about is not how long you've been married, and really not what's happening in your marriage, but it's how you handle life. It's how you process life together. The quality of a marriage. Is it a winter marriage where you're cold and distant and withdrawn from each other, or you're harsh toward each other? Or is it a spring marriage where you're anticipating new things and you're planning to do some new things together? So I think the seasons do give a really good picture in which to describe the quality of our relationship.
So if I were to ask you, you know, what benefit, and you've just mostly answered that question, what benefit, how this book can benefit couples, for instance, that feel like they're in a winter season, as you have described, and maybe they've been in it a very long time, and they can't seem to get out of it, and probably are headed for divorce. If a winter season hangs in too long, that's what's going to happen, isn't
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Winter either leads to divorce, or we just settle in the igloo and decide we're going to stay with this forever and just have a, you know, a cold marriage. Mm-hmm. Or it can stimulate you to say, hey, let's try to do something to see if we can go back to spring. And that's the second half of the book, where I give 7 strategies for enhancing the seasons of your marriage, or 7 strategies on how to spend more time in spring and summer, less time in fall and winter.
Probably, we probably need to start with those strategies right away, because as you know, this show goes very quickly and we don't have a lot of time. And the first one that you named is interesting, is probably going to throw them in at least a short winter period as they deal with past failures.
I think one of the factors when you're in a cold winter marriage, one of the factors is really dealing realistically with past failures. I mean,
now,
obviously there were failures.
Are we talking about personal failures or marital failures?
I think both, and particularly how they interact with the marriage. Obviously, you don't get to a winter marriage without doing something wrong, okay? And typically, it's an attitude of rigidity. Failure to recognize the validity of the other person's thoughts and feelings and experiences. It's going to be my way or no way. And so it's no way. You know, we end up in a winter marriage. And so we've got to go back and deal with those failures. And most of the people I meet would really like to get rid of the past, but they're not willing to deal with the failures. You've got to walk through them. You've got to identify what the failures are, and then you've got to be willing to confess your part in the wrong, and then ask forgiveness. And that's really big for some people.
Oh, you mean 2 people are involved in these failures? I like the way you brought that out in your book, because as a therapist, I know the first thing I always hear is what's wrong with the other one when they come for marital counseling. Believe it or not, it's already time for break, and we'll be right back.
Love language number 1, words of affirmation, using words to affirm your wife if you're a husband. You look nice in that outfit. Oh man, I love these potatoes. You know, just words of appreciation for things she does, for the way she looks, for something she says, anything, but looking for ways to give her affirming words. You know, the book of Proverbs says, life and death are in the power of the tongue. And I think husbands don't realize how important their words are to their wives. When a husband gives his wife positive words, there's something inside of her that wants to be better. And when he gives her negative words, there's something inside of her that wants to shoot him. You know? The scriptures say that a husband is to love his wife like Christ loves the church. It's a pretty high example, you know, because Christ gave his whole life for the church. And I think many husbands have heard that verse, but it's not practical to them. It's, what does that mean? You know, I can't go out and be crucified for my wife. Well, not literally, but you can go out and pour your life out for your wife. And in this book on the love languages for men, I'm trying to say, you know, guys, there is an effective way to communicate love to your wife. If you will learn her primary love language, and if you will speak it regularly, you will have a wife whose love tank will be full. I mean, she will feel your love. And consequently, she's far more likely to reciprocate and love you in an effective way. Yes, I think acts of service is one of the 5 love languages. But let's face it, all of these are service. It's an attitude of service. If you're going to love someone, it means you're going to give something for them. In this case, you're giving acts of service. You're doing something for them. And Christ, you know, gave us the example of washing the feet of his followers. That's an act of service. Now, I doubt that a husband's wife is going to want him to wash her feet unless she's not able to do that. But she has a lot of other good ideas, you know, such as vacuuming floors and cleaning windows and a lot of other things in ways in which he can serve her. And when he does, he's communicating love to her. And really, any of the 5 can communicate love, but the primary is going to communicate more deeply to that wife. You know, the first time I heard the love tank used was by Dr. Ross Campbell. Remember years ago he wrote a book called How to Really Love Your Child? He mentioned the love tank of children. So he's the first one I heard use the tank idea. I then applied it to adults because I think adults also have a love tank. And in a marriage, when you feel loved, the whole world looks bright. But when you don't feel loved, then things begin to look pretty dark. So it helps me to have a visual image of my filling up my wife's love tank.
It's always great having you join us on Time for Hope, and nothing buoys our spirits anymore than to hear from you, and you tell us that you're watching Time for Hope, that you're learning from Time for Hope, or perhaps we even helped you with some kind of problem or situation that's going on in your life. I sat at my desk over the weekend, actually. I was going through some of the prayer requests, and a lot of heartache, a lot of pain that I read. A good stack of them, as a matter of fact, and I took each one of them and thought about it and wrote some notes and prayed over them, and I thought there just really are a lot of hurting people out there, and we hope that Time for Hope in some way, somehow, is just filling a little niche in that world of pain and hurt. If you haven't shared your prayer request or your situation with us, we encourage you to do that. We do try to acknowledge each and every one individually, either with a note or making sure that we pray over your situation. And then you can go to our website, many resources to draw from there that could also give you some direction. We'll be adding Dr. Chapman's book to that resource list. And Gary, it is true, and you know it. You travel this world over, and I'm sure people line up to tell you about their troubled marriages. And how often do you hear, oh, we're in the summertime of our marriage. Tell me how often you hear that.
Not very often. You know, okay. The folks who come to see me for counseling are almost always in winter, or at least in fall. And the emails I get, you know, people pour out their pain and their trouble in their marriage. Not many people write to say, you know, we're having a spring marriage or a summer marriage. But the fact is, many people are. There are lots of people who have spring marriages and summer marriages. In fact, I hope everybody has a little taste of spring and summer somewhere along the way. But there are a lot of people who are troubled. Many people are in fall, which means that things look well on the outside. You know, in the fall season, the leaves are just beautiful. But the fact is they're about to fall off the tree, you know. And so the marriage looks beautiful on the outside, but things are happening on the inside, and we're not quite sure where this marriage is going. A lot of folks there, uncertainty in their relationship. And that's one of the reasons I wrote the book, is to help people identify where they are, and then to say, look, if you'd rather spend some more time in summer and spring, you can. And here's the way you go about it. You got to deal with the past failures, and then I give other strategies on how to do that.
And Gary, one of the things when I write about the seasons of life in general, not just applying them to a marriage, which you have done, I encourage people with the whole fact that spring always follows winter. You don't back up to fall. Guess right. What? If you can move forward to spring, and there's hope there, isn't there? Spring is just full of hope, whether it's in a marriage or whether it's in life.
That's right. And you know, a part of that, Frieda, is not just dealing with the past failures. I think that's the first step. But it's also changing your attitude, because a lot of folks in a winter marriage have a negative attitude. They have the attitude of, this marriage is never going to be better. It's been too long, nothing's going to ever change, and I'm stuck. But you begin thinking differently. You begin to think, you know, I'm married to a person who's made in the image of God. They don't act like it very much, but they are. I'm married to someone who has some abilities. I forget that sometimes because I see the negative things in their behavior. I'm married to someone who has potential to be different, because God can work in their heart and they can respond. You begin to think positively, and what happens? You change the climate of the marriage simply by your attitude, and consequently, your spouse is more likely to make some of those changes.
You know, and you brought that out in your book so beautifully, and I teach it all the time too. We don't change the other person by focusing on changing the other person. You threw it right back on the spouse that wants to see the changes. And guess what? They must change if they want to see their spouse change. So you've talked about a winning attitude. And of course, there's no way under the sun you would have left out learning the love languages in the
book,
right?
That's one of the strategies for improving a marriage is learn the love language of your spouse.
You want to just kind of touch on that? And
yeah.
We're gonna, of course, they can order that book also.
Sure, we'll give a brief summary of that, okay?
Okay?
The five languages are words of affirmation, looking for something good and affirming your spouse, acts of service, doing something to help your spouse, gifts, universal to give gifts as an expression of love, quality time, which means I choose to give you my undivided attention, and physical touch. And your spouse, one of those is more important than the others. And if you learn to speak their primary love language, you touch something inside of them that warms up to you. And that obviously is a strategy that has helped thousands of marriages learn how to change the climate in a positive way. So that's one of the seven strategies is learning the love language of your spouse and speaking it.
And getting your book, because it'll say a lot more about it than you've already said. The flip side of that is learning to recognize the way your spouse, what your spouse's love language is to you also.
Yes. Yeah. And sharing that with them.
And sharing that with them. And then you've got another one, the awesome power of empathetic listening, and whoever wants to listen to what the other one has to say. I want to come back with that because it's so terribly important in a marriage. After break, we're going to talk about active, empathetic listening, and we will be right back. Recently, while having my nails done, I observed a car drive up and deliver an elderly woman to the nail salon. Although she walked with a cane, she was attractively dressed, and her hair and makeup looked like the work of artists. When her nails were finished, I noticed that she was walking around and appeared to be looking for someone, and actually related that her husband was supposed to be there to pick her up. Soon, an elderly man showed up, but by then his wife was involved with some of the other patrons and didn't see or notice him. When asked, he advised the owner that he was there to pick up his lady. His using that word quickly got my attention. He said it with such admiration and affection. His wife soon realized that he was there and walked over to him and reached out and said, "Yes, I belong to him." And he, in response, asserted, "No, I belong to her." It was such a beautiful scene because this couple was at least in their 80s, and the love that shined in their faces for each other is a rare sight. Each wanted it to be known that he or she belonged to the other. Now, I have no way of knowing if it had been a long-term or recent marriage, but for sure, they were in a summer season of their marriage. No doubt summer seasons are the best for any marriage because everything feels better, grows better, and looks brighter when the sun is shining and the warm days are long. But sadly, this is not the real world of marriage. In fact, it is unrealistic to believe that two people with different familial backgrounds, different personalities, and different needs would never experience fall and winter seasons in their marriage. I am of the opinion, if an all-summer marriage were a possibility, that it could eventually become boring, and that it certainly would not provide times of inner growth and renewal as winter and spring do for the beautiful trees and flowers that we get to enjoy. My challenge to you is when the cold winds of winter began to blow in your marriage, see what they have to say to you and believe if you listen and do what it takes to keep the home fires burning, that spring will come again. We always appreciate having you join us on Time for Hope. Our guest is Dr. Gary Chapman, and we're talking about his book, The Four Seasons of Marriage. And just as we promised, Gary, we want to talk about this, the power of empathetic listening. Now, that's empathetic. Let's first of all tell them what that's all about.
Well, you know, I think most of us have not been trained in listening. We've been trained in sharing our ideas, but we haven't been trained in trying to understand the other person's ideas. And in a marriage, this is absolutely essential. If you're going to get to spring and summer and spend more time there, you've got to learn how to be an empathetic listener, which means I want to understand what you're thinking and what you're feeling and how important it is to you. Which means I want to try to get in your shoes and look at the world through your eyes. And the only way to do that is to learn how to listen to the other person. So in this chapter in the book, I'm trying to help people who've had basically no training in how to do that learn the simple things of how you listen to someone. For example, one idea is that you don't share your point of view until they tell you, yeah, I think you've understood me. I think you've got what I'm saying. And then you say, honey, I think I understand you. Now, would you like to hear my perspective on it? And now they'll listen to you because you've listened to them. But, you know, one research project indicated that the average conversation, a person will listen 17 seconds before they interrupt and give their idea.
How many seconds?
17.
Yeah, as marriage therapists, we encourage them to do it for maybe 3 minutes at the time. It's difficult for a person to sit 3 minutes and listen to what the other one is having to say. We do allow them to stop and say, do you mean such and such a thing? That's what we call reflective active listening, isn't
right.
it? When we can say, I don't quite understand what you just said. Could you explain that to me in a better way, you know, or whatever. That kind of interrupting actually
positive.
Helps them.
Yeah, it keeps
positive.
The flow.
It keeps the flow going.
That's right.
Doesn't it?
But the thing is to have in your mind, I'm here right now. I'm here not to share my ideas. I'm here to learn your ideas.
Mm-hmm.
So let me help you keep talking until I feel like I've understood and you feel like I've understood. Then I can share my side, and you will likely hear my side. Once we look at the sides, we can still disagree, mm-hmm. and we can honestly say, you know, honey, we really see this differently, don't we? Now, how can we solve the problem? And we spend our energy looking on solutions rather than fighting each other and putting each other's ideas down. You know, there's nothing to be gained in arguing, everything to be gained in listening, understanding, and looking for solutions.
And refusing to pass judgment. That word different is what you used. And if we can get a couple to understand, they can view the whole world differently. They can view every situation that comes up differently.
Yeah.
As long as they see the other person is seeing it differently and not passing judgment on the way the other person is seeing it.
Because you see, if we end up the conversation and the wife is the loser and I'm the winner, okay, I won this argument. It's no fun to live with a loser. So why would I want you to lose the argument? Because I'm going to have to live with you, you know? So better to come out with both of us winning, both of us finding a solution that we feel good about, that we can both live. It wasn't what we either of us wanted, but it's something we both can live with and feel good about. And we both feel respected and loved by the other person. That's what creates spring and summer, rather than the judgmental idea that I'm right and you're wrong. Listen to me. I'm going to tell you one more time. You know,
I have all the answers, and you know, without me, you know, the world would fall apart. And I know how to straighten this marriage out. And we could go on and on in thinking of the power of just sitting and hearing what's up. And that can go with friends, people in the church. It works in all relationships,
absolutely.
Doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Rather than just in a marriage. You've got another strategy. Discover the joy of helping your spouse succeed. Oh, my goodness, Gary. You've just really hit on a core issue here. because this will reveal the selfishness between two people. When I'm out for me, myself, and I'm not really interested. You're to help me climb the ladder or succeed, but forget you.
And you know, this is what gets us into winter, is that our idea is the right idea. My way is the right way to do it. My time is the right time to do it. Now listen to me and do it my way.
But theologically, let's just stop right here, because you may be the only one I've ever allowed to discuss this on Time for Hope, because I know what you said in your book and I trust you with it. You're theologically trained also. And we're talking, there is that whole issue of submission when it comes to Christians too, right? And generally, isn't it thought that the wife is to help the husband succeed, and that's the end of the story?
That's the way many people read that, you know. But when you look at the biblical concept, the husband, the head of the wife, you know, the wife submitting to the husband, what did the head do? He's the head as Christ is the head. What did the head do? He died. He died for the spouse. He died for the church, you know. So the leader, the husband as the leader, is to give his life away to help his wife succeed. You know, that's one of my greatest joys in life, is to look at my wife and to see her, what she has become, how she's developed her talents. She's a musician, how she's developed her talents and how she works with ladies in the church, and she's so fulfilled in her life. And to know in my heart, I had a lot to do with that. I helped her. I encouraged her, you know. So it goes both ways in a marriage. She's helping him succeed. He's helping her succeed. What happens? Both of you are winners.
And that's mutual submission. Isn't that what you believe that the scripture's teaching? So do I. Then you've got, oh my goodness, maximize your differences. It looks like that throw everybody into a winter season, but it really doesn't.
It doesn't. If we don't learn to process them, we do. You know, it's the differences that cause the conflicts, and then we argue and we don't get them solved, and so we settle down in the winter season of marriage. But the fact is, the differences are there to be an asset. That's right. One of you is organized, okay, and one of you is unorganized. Yeah. What a wonderful team.
And that's what it's all about, that word team that you use.
Absolutely.
One more strategy. Implement the power of positive influence rather than the negative.
Yeah, and that chapter is particularly for those individuals where their spouse won't read the book. They don't want to talk about the seasons of marriage. I'm saying you can read the book. You can influence your spouse by applying these principles.
Great job as we go out, Gary. And of course, we encourage you to make sure that you get a copy of Dr. Chapman's book, The Four Seasons of Marriage, also The Five Love Languages. And we look forward to having you join us again next week.
A free fact sheet that contains additional information about today's topic is available upon request from our ministry. You can also receive a copy of today's resource for $11 plus $3 shipping and handling. To receive the free fact sheet, or our guest's book, or both, you may call us at 1-800-669-9133. Write us at Post Office Box 2169, Spartanburg, South Carolina, 29304. Or visit our website at timeforhope.org. When you call or write, please prayerfully consider a donation to our ministry. Our ministry's mission is to offer hope to discouraged and hurting people. As we continue to give out messages of hope, you can become a member of our team by sending us a financial gift of any amount. When you send your gift to support Time for Hope, you are joining us in offering hope to many viewers who might believe there is no hope for their situation. And you're also enabling us to inform and inspire some viewers to expand our mission as they learn and in turn can minister more effectively to hurting people around them. Until next time, have a great week. And remember, it is time for hope.